everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Walk the Line podcast. It's coming closer to Christmas, and we've got a merch store still available. Got a new limited edition hoodies, t-shirts, mugs, all that sort of stuff. Perfect for the loved ones at Christmas time. So go ahead, have a look. Link is in the description below, so go for it. And we are also ramping up the episodes at the minute. Every Wednesday, 8 p.m., Greenwich Mean Time, we will be releasing an episode with a fantastic guest, which brings me into an amazing segue. As my guest today, I am joined by the amazing Marcy Warhaf. Marcy has worked as a body image self-esteem advocate since 2007, although Marcy's just released she describes it as a real and raw memoir, and it's called The Good Stripper, a soccer mom's memoir of lies, loss, and lap dances. I've read the book, guys, to be quite honest with you, and it's a belter. I really, really, like, I want to say really enjoyed it, but it opened my eyes up. You know, she talks about the years she lived a secret double life as the perfect soccer mom, housewife, you know, yes or no sir sort of thing during the day, but a town vixen at night time. And during this time, she spent months working as a stripper and a few years trying to find the self-worth through promiscuous behavior from one way or the other sort of thing. So guys, check out her book. It's a great read. The link is in the description below. And Marcy is kind enough to give us a 20% discount on it. It's also available on Kindle if you're that way inclined. So there you go. But guys, have a look at it. I had a great chat with Marcy. We had a really frank and upfront chat about everything about, obviously, self-esteem, body image, as well. Marcy was involved in the fitness industry as an ex-bodybuilder. So we had a great chat. So guys, hope you enjoy it. Go and check out Marcy's book. Download. All the socials are below in the description. If you want to reach out to her, she is more than happy to do so. She discusses that on the podcast. So guys, without further ado, please welcome the absolutely fantastic Marcy Warhaft. Marcy, how are you getting on? How's things?
Good. Hanging in. Doing okay.
Hanging in there. Are you in Canada right now, are you?
Yes, I'm in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I was
going to say, right, because over in the UK here, it's literally cold as butt. It's cold as fuck. It's horrible. It's horrible. And it's like the first time I had to go out this morning and de-ice my car. Now, our cold is probably like a heat wave to you guys over there, because it's not as cold as, like, you know what cold is. I can imagine over your neck of the woods, it's like -1 degree Celsius is just like a normal day.
Oh, yeah, it's true. And I'm from Montreal, which was even colder. So I should be used to it by now, but I hate it. And it gets dark at like noon. Like, it just feels, not at noon, I'm exaggerating, but like 4:30, it starts to get dark. And so it feels like, I'm like, oh, is it 10 o'clock? And it's 5:30. I'm like, what is that? It just doesn't, it's not right. It's not right.
I still like it because I have to start work at first thing in the morning. So I leave when it's dark and I come home when it's dark. And it makes me cry a little bit. I can't lie to you. It's just like, oh, I don't like this. And it's, and the worst thing about what I've done, I've got one last year. Because I didn't really have a car before. So I didn't need one. But now I'm traveling for work all the time. So I thought to myself, I'll go and get myself a car. Now, I'm 38 years old. I know I don't look it. It's just, I've got good genes. People who are listening to this, I know people listening to this is probably going, oh, really? People are watching this on YouTube going, he's full of shit. Look at him. He's had a hard life. He's had a hard paper around that boy. Look at him. But I thought to myself, I need to get myself a car, a nice practical car. I've got a six-year-old daughter. She wants a practical car. So I decided to go on Facebook of all places, and I found this car. And it's I don't know what you guys, I don't know if you know the phrase, hairdresser's car over.
No.
Basically, you know, it's like a young person's car. It's a convertible. It's a two-seater convertible. And I bought this time last year when it is freezing. It's like -5 outside. And I buy a convertible with leather seats. I just can't lie to you. It wasn't practical at all. I still got it because I refused to get rid of it because it was such a good deal. I don't want to get rid of it.
What color is it?
It's black. I call it the bullet.
Oh.
It's a little black. Say that during the summer, cruising around on this bad boy with the top down, blaring out Backstreet Boys. There's nothing like it. Can't go wrong.
Well, I can go a little wrong, but that's okay.
Well, it's either that, or I've got my daughter next to me, and we're blazing out Moana or Frozen or something like that.
Right.
So it's been a bad thing. But the worst thing about being from obviously the UK is we constantly talk about the weather, and sometimes I have to stop myself whenever I'm on the show when I talk to people, because a lot of my audience is in the US and over the like Canada, US sort of thing, and I always have to stop myself talking about the weather, and I've just done it again. I can't believe it. Damn it. I'm living up to the stereotype here. And this is the worst thing about it. They always say, oh, but Ryan, you're Scottish. You're supposed to be used to the cold. Yeah, but I'm still human. Cold does affect me.
That's what I said. I'm from Montreal, and I'm way older than you are. And I've been in the cold forever, and I still hate it. I'm just not, you know what? And here, what's interesting is, for example, on Sunday, it was really nice. And then Monday, you walk outside and everything's covered in snow. Like, what happened? And it could change like that overnight. And it's just, it's not pleasant. And I thought to myself, is it pretty? Absolutely. Do I like it? No, I don't. It's nice. If it snowed on Christmas Day and then never again, then that would be perfect. I don't like the cold.
It's just, the thing is when it's snowing like this, you enjoy it for like 5 minutes after you've constructed the 6-foot snow penis in your front garden, which normally happens on every year when it snows. After that's finished, there's nothing else to do. You've chucked some snowballs at each other. You're now wet and cold. That's it. I'm done.
That's it. Exactly.
Get me back into that warm fire again. This is what happens. This is what it should do. But anyway, that's enough of this weather talk. I don't want to keep talking. We could talk about this for ages, Vassy. Come on. We've got you on here for a reason. So Vassy, you got in contact with us, and you were the first one of the first people that I kind of reached out to, just for the sole reason as you seem incredibly interesting, as obviously your background and obviously what you're doing now. Now you've released a book, which is was it The Good Stripper as well?
The Good Stripper, a soccer mom's memoir of lies, loss, and lap dances.
I love that.
Very, very subtle type.
And you're also into the fitness industry as well. So obviously, what you've been doing with that is promoting kind of obviously healthy, wealthy, but also promoting body image and self confidence and things like that as well, which I want to delve into at some point because this is a very hot topic right now. But let's get a bit of background. Let's wind it all back and say, like, you've obviously released the book, The Good Stripper. Where did this book come from? Tell the audience what it's all about and why they should read it.
Okay, basically, The Good Stripper it's a story about how anybody can start off in life feeling loved and safe and like they can take on the world, but then how life can throw stuff at us that completely derails us. And with things that we're not prepared for, that we're not equipped to handle. For me, it was a multitude of traumas that led me down some pretty dark paths and into what became a double life, where I was a mom and I was married and I was trying to be what I thought was the perfect wife and the perfect mother, while also trying desperately to find validation and love through the sexualization of my body, which nearly destroyed me. But ultimately, my resilience kicked in, even though I thought it was gone. And I fought my way back and I reclaimed my life and my body and turned everything around. And I wrote the book because I want other people to know that that's possible. And I dedicate it actually to anyone who's struggling to forgive themselves for the mistakes they made when they were just trying to survive.
Mm. Wow. So, I mean, as you mentioned, this is a biopic sort of thing?
It's a memoir. It's 100% true.
Is it always 100%? Because I remember when you read the book, I've kind of went through it in the first part of it, you had to kind of mention, take away some names and change some names up. Did you get a lot of flack? Because this is a bit of a personal story. It's a little bit of a real story, I want to call it. There's no sugarcoating. It's hits you straight in the throat, and it's straight down the middle. There's no this hairy fairy unicorns and rainbows. It's straight down the middle, which sometimes is the best way to be to get that message across. But did you get anyone really kind of read the book and go, hold on a minute, this is
well, I'll tell you. Well, first, I just have to say, when you say that, my favorite review was somebody said, it hits you in the face with a fuck you and dares you to challenge it. And I loved that.
You should get that on your website. You should put that right. Is it on the top? Put that right across the top.
I know. It's so amazing. I mean, listen, I was surprised I didn't really. I got a little bit of flack when a few people heard it was coming out. I sort of kept it close to my chest until I knew it was going to be published. And I had a few people, so I had a couple of people say things to me, but then they kind of quieted down. I think I know that there are people who are not owning their part, which is fine, and probably saying that I'm not being honest, and that's fine. I didn't write it to hurt anybody. I didn't write it to make anyone look bad at all. I mean, I did keep some things out because I didn't want to hurt people. But it's my story. And there are people involved in your story. When it's your life, there are people that are involved. And I couldn't be authentic without mentioning things. So nobody's really, to me, I'm sure there are people talking about me, but nobody's really come after me for it. I mean, every single thing is true. And if anything, I've softened things. So I would find it very, it would be pretty crappy if somebody came to me angry, because listen, you did it, you said it, you were there.
Yeah.
So, well, that's, and if you don't want to own it, that's fine. Nobody has to, that's the other thing too, sorry to interrupt, but the thing is, if somebody's going to come to me or publicly try to, I don't know, say that, they're going to out themselves. Right? Like I have hidden as much as I could. So they have to be very careful with what they say because they don't want to out themselves.
Yeah, because they'll look like knobheads, won't they? They're the ones that are going to look like idiots. And it's just
that's it. Yeah. And I went to great pains to hide as much as I could. So.
Did you really want to hide them? Did you sit there? Did you debate much about it by going, fuck that, I'm going to give them a little bit of shit now. You know?
Honestly... No, I honestly did not. I didn't want to hurt anybody else. I didn't, but again, I couldn't whitewash everything. I couldn't clean everything up. And there were things, I'll tell you this. I had a friend of mine who was an author who said to me, write it as if nobody's going to read it. So, which means, because a lot of times what people do is they'll write and they'll be thinking, oh my God, my kids are going to read it. Oh my God, this person's going to read it. Oh my God. And then you edit yourself.
Yeah.
She's like, pretend no one's going to read. And then you can go back. And so I did that. I just wrote it and I didn't take anything out. There were times, I'm telling you, Ryan, I'd be typing and I'd stop and go, oh my God, can I say that? I don't know if I can say that. Can I say that? But then I said it, you know? That was the thing. If I was going to write it, I was going to write it. That was it. That's the only way I am. It's like I'm with everything. I'm like go big or go home kind of girl. And if I was going to write it, I was going to write it. And I wrote it.
And you done it, and it's there. But it's a very respectful way to do it. To be fair, you know, if it was myself, I'd be like the big fuck you. I'd be like, nah, I'm being petty. You're getting your bastards. You know what I mean? But I'm a novice. Hopefully I won't need to write any sort of memoirs because I've not really got that much of an interesting story. But you went from. Into the book itself, it's obviously a memoir of you. I mean, I don't know how to really kind of describe about it because I don't want it to spoil it for everyone because this is the reason why you want to buy the book, guys. But the book is quite challenging. It's a bit at points. It's a hard read, you know. When you wrote the book, I've chatted to authors before who have talked about different subjects. Was it hard to write the book? Because you had to relive that again and remind yourself of it.
So it's funny that you say that because people will say it's an easy read in the sense that they read it very quickly. Like I'll have a lot of people who say I picked it up in the morning and I was done by night or a few days later. But yes, there are I've also had people say I needed to put it down because they needed to sort of process or something struck a chord. Even though the details of my story are a little bit different, everyone's dealt with loss or everyone's dealt with bad relationships or there's things that we've all dealt with that we can relate to. But yeah, what was tough about the writing process, and it's great that you asked me that because a lot of people say, oh, it must've been so cathartic. And yeah, parts of it were, but they're also, because it's your life, because it's my life and you sort of get used to it in a way, the more you tell a story, I learned through a lot of my traumas, the more that you talk about it, the less it owns you, the more it becomes just a story and you become detached from it, which is great. That's how we survive, but that's not good for writing a book. So I couldn't be that detached because I wanted people to know how much I loved people that I loved and lost. I wanted people to feel when I was in pain. I wanted people to feel what I was feeling. In order to do that, I had to go back and feel that. So it really was me, all the scar tissue that I built up, I had to go back in and open it all up again. So there were chapters, and I say this all the time, where a lot of the book I wrote in one day, like each chapter, because I would write through the night into the next day because I couldn't stay in that part of my life more than a day. So I needed to get it out and then go on to the next one.
Get rid of it. I can understand that. I can see the mentality as well, because when I do things like if I'm working or if I've got a project, if I'm doing my podcast instead of things, I'm doing my editing. It's not compared to what you write the book. I'm just saying, once you do that, you get into that sort of mindset, you get into that way. And I do it with everything. And I can understand that to a certain degree, that you want to just focus. You're in the zone, they call it, don't they? They always call it, you're in the zone. And you want to stay in that zone as much as possible, but for as less time as possible, because you want to get it done. So it's probably the best way to have done it, really, to be fair. I'm no expert, obviously, but I think a lot of people would probably understand the reason why you did that.
I was also in physical pain, because, and I realized I wrote the book in about 7 or 8 months in total. Wow. So I wrote it pretty quickly.
That's still, when you think about it, 7 months is a pretty long time to relive that, if that makes sense.
In
a book sense, it's a short term, but
it's a long run. You don't really want to go through anything for 7 or 8 months. However, what made it so intense, I guess, is that I wrote up until I was in my 40s, like the story sort of ends when I'm in my 40s.
Yeah.
So I and starts when I'm a kid. So it's going through all those years in 7 or 8 months. It's a lot. Wow. so it's funny because somebody had said to me once with my chapters too. It's kind of like you read my chapter and then you're like, oh, okay, she's okay, and then it ends with like, but then, and then I go into the next chapter and they're like, God, it's just one thing after another after another, and that's how my life was. Somebody said once, I saw somebody asked a question, if you could go back and relive 5 years of your life, pick 5 years of your life to relive, which would you pick? And I thought about it and I thought, okay, which traumas would I go through again? Because there hasn't been 5 years where I haven't had at least one major trauma, at least one. So I thought, okay, which one would I, you know, and that's that. And then I was like, even that, that's crazy to think that I haven't had that much of a span where things were like, okay, you know, so that's exhausting.
I mean, it's you could put it on the other side. I mean, I'm a big believer in the way things are, I don't want to say things happen for a reason, because that's very harsh of me to say so, but the way that you wouldn't be where you are now from my point of view, you know, everyone's been through a certain amount of bits and pieces. Obviously with your book, you've been through probably more than a lot of people, to be quite honest with you, but you wouldn't be where you are now if that didn't happen. What do you think? Do you think that's a fair assessment, or do you think that's a little bit like, no, I don't think so?
This is what I think, because I hear that a lot. I think anybody who's been through anything has had somebody say to them, well, you wouldn't be who you are, right? You wouldn't be as strong. You wouldn't be as kind. You wouldn't be as, and I get it, but I'm going to kind of take the other, which is the unpopular opinion with that, and I don't know. I mean, I think I'll give you a sort of a weird example. I remember, so my brother died when I was 17 and he was 21, and obviously devastating for my mother, obviously. And I remember, and she was love personified. She's just the before, after, just the most incredible person. But I remember her saying that people would say to her, well, it's made you, I'm sure that loss has made you more empathetic. And she said, maybe, but I'd rather be less empathetic and have my child back. And that's sort of how I see it is, yeah, listen, there are things that I wouldn't understand the way I understand now had I not been certain things. Yeah. But honestly, would I take having my brother back? Yes. Would I take having my mother back? Yeah. So I can't, I'm not one of those people, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I may sound harsh, but I'm not somebody who's like, I'm grateful for my traumas. I'm not. And I'm not somebody who's, my traumas didn't make me who I am. My resilience did that. My traumas beat the shit out of me. It's my resilience. So it's not the shit I went through that made me who I am. It's how I came out of it that made me who I am. And I think that there's a difference. And I would like to believe that I like who I am now. And I liked who I was when I was a little kid. Like I used to say all the time, I peaked when I was 10. Like I was like amazing. And then it was kind of downhill for a while. But I like to think that now I'm more like I was when I was younger. The things I liked about myself then that I lost, right, I have that now. So I'd like to think that even if I hadn't been through some of the stuff I went through, eventually I still would have been me. Yeah. A little bit different, but I still, who you are is who you are at your core. Mm. Life can change you, but yeah, so I will never give credit to the bad shit that happened.
That's probably the best way I've actually heard an argument to that story, to be fair. That is probably the greatest. Yeah, I'd probably say that's hands down the best way to describe it than, well, what the way I said it sort of thing. A great argument back at it. And I'll have to probably strongly agree with you in all fairness, because, yeah, it's exactly true. I can't really say anything else on top of what you said there. My God, I've just been lost for words for the first time ever, guys. Here we go. Massey's done it. It's been 50 episodes in and someone's eventually done it. I love it. But you mentioned it was 40. You said that you were 40 years old when it really you said it was 40 when it kind of resonated, or was that when it you kind of just went woof and took a step back from everything? Or
when, wait,
you mentioned earlier, sorry, you mentioned it when you were 40 years old.
No, I was saying that's when the book sort of ends. I'm 51 now.
Ah, okay.
And the book so ends, I wrote, right, up until I was 46, which is pretty much when I left my marriage. And that's right, sort of where the book ends. So I was writing up until that. So it really, I started to write the book when I was 49, I think. And that, I think there were a lot of things that sort of made me go, this is the time. Cause I'm asked that a lot. It's like, why now? And it was like, I think, yeah, I was approaching 50 and I was like, I got more years behind me than in front of me.
Looking great for 50, by the way, I have to say, if anyone's watching this, I wish I was looking as good as you at 50, I tell you, I don't think I'm gonna.
51, don't cheat me out of a year. no, I think it was just, I let my secrets and the shame I had around my secrets keep me from being everything I could be, just comfortable in myself. And I'd let fear hold me back. And I didn't want to do that. I learned my whole life that life can be short. And I learned that I don't know how long I have. I could have 50 more years. I could have 5. You don't know. And so I didn't want to waste another second not being fully me. And I got to that point. And maybe, honestly, maybe it was as a woman turning 50, but there was a part of me that was like, fuck this. I am not going to care. Like, I'm really not going to care. I know there are a million memes and quotes on social media saying, don't worry about what other people think, but I really don't care what people think. And I proved that by putting out this book. That's like this is it. And if you like it, great. If you don't, fine. You know, and I wasn't afraid. I was prepared for people to walk away and that would be okay. I had to be comfortable with myself. As long as I could look myself in the mirror, I was okay.
That's a good thing. I mean, have you had, what's the feedback, the feedback you've had so far? Has it been positive or negative? Anything?
Yeah. That's what really surprised me. No, it's, again, I'm sure there are people who aren't happy or who look at me differently. I'm sure, of course.
It's 2021. Of course it is. There's obviously going to be people.
Of course. But nobody's come at me. And what I found is I've been really amazed. I will get messages every single day through social media from people who are telling me how they connect to the story, who are people who are telling me they feel less alone, who I mean, it's funny because the one word I hear all the time is brave, right? You're so brave. And I'm like, am I brave or am I a little crazy? You know, it's
but a mixture of both. Like,
you know, yes, I mean? Because I heard somebody had said something, I'm going to totally paraphrase it, but it's like somebody said, I'm so impressed with how you can share your trauma. And they're like, well, it's the trauma. You know, it's like, maybe it's what I've been through that makes me kind of be like, this is it. Like, I've been hurt a lot and I've survived it. So your judgment isn't going to hurt me. Like, that's not what's going to do it. You know, if nothing else did it, that's not what's going to do it. So, yeah, the feedback's been really, I think what really surprised me is hearing from people that I went to camp with when I was 8 years old, or, you know, my boyfriend when I was in the fifth grade, or and it's people just saying, a lot of it's like, I wish I could hug you, or I wish I could go, I wish I knew and I could take you out of that. Or, or a lot of people are just like, I had no idea. And what they'll say, which is such a cliche, but I think my story really is proof that you don't know what's going on in somebody's life, because people who knew me during what I call my crazy time had no clue. And I'm sure there was tons of judgment. And then they look back and they'll say, oh, okay. Like, I get
penny,
it now.
Penny drop sort of thing. The realization kind of goes, because that's right. the same with everyone, really. Even after relationships that are kind of broken down and marriages have failed and that, and everyone puts a persona onto everyone else when they're going through it, whatever, because they don't want to have that judgment from people. They don't want to have people chatting about them. As you mentioned before, it's like they hate what people think. So they put that persona. So when they do finally end things, or something happens, or something, they find out stuff, they go, oh, but I thought you were really happy, or I thought this, and you're like, you don't know what's happened behind closed doors.
We
show you what we want to show you, nothing else. You don't see what goes on. And
yeah, exactly.
And that's the whole part. And that's did you get a little bit digging a little bit deeper in, when people were saying this to you, sort of thing, were you just like, oh, just sick of this, you know? Of course you didn't know, because they didn't let you know. Don't come at me with like, oh, we didn't know, otherwise we would have helped you out. Would you have done help me out, or did you just not want to see it?
Well, I think, it's funny because some of it is like when I talk about, again, people I knew when I was a kid who are saying, oh, I wish I would have known. And then you're like, I love that people have this kind of savior mentality. And I think it's very sweet, but you had your own life. No, you probably could. Like, weren't real, like, realistically, I love that people feel that way, but realistically, we all have our own stuff. I think the people who were really there and who were really, a lot of the people who could have seen it didn't want to see it, still don't want to see it, I'm sure.
That denial sort of thing kicking in.
Well, for sure, because you know what? I think anyone who isn't happy that I'm speaking out, it's because they don't want to acknowledge what happened. They don't think it looks good on them. And that's fine. And I respect that, which is why I would not want to call anybody out or whatever. But I think sometimes it's like, I'm going to give you another example from my mom, actually, which is, I remember again when my brother passed away and we would walk through a mall. And I remember early on, and her friends, she would see people or people who just, you know, acquaintances, and they come over to her and say, how are you feeling? And then she'd tell them how she's feeling, which is horrible. And she'd start to cry. And I could see as a kid how uncomfortable it made them. And I'd say to her, you know what? Tell the people who love you how you're feeling. These people, all they wanted, they just want to hear, I'm okay, thank you. So that they know, I asked her how she's feeling. They could feel good about themselves, but they don't have to deal with it, because when other people are going through something, it's uncomfortable. A lot of people find it uncomfortable. So they just want to hear you're okay. Even if they know you're not fine, they just want to know you're fine. And it's the same thing with this. I think people don't, also, if people know something's not okay, they may feel like they need to do something about it. And they don't want to do anything about
obliged it. Obliged to, sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, so they don't want. I mean, I had a couple of close friends who knew what was going on, and they were great. And they knew that they couldn't take me out of the situation. But they let me know, they didn't judge me, they loved me, they were terrified for me, but they were there for me. And that's all that they could do.
I mean, I can resonate that a little bit as well, because when my mom passed away when I was 25. And it is that, you do get that awkward moment when you first see someone who's found out, and they're just like, how you doing? You're right. And you're like, you just want to sit there and go, no, mate, I'm digesting, you knobhead. Of course I'm not. What are you asking that for? You know? Come on, just sit there, buy me a drink and tell me everything's going to be all right. That's all I want. I don't care about your sympathy. Come on.
That's it. It's funny because I talk in the book the day my brother died, and I was writing an English exam. I did not see it coming. And I'm driving, my uncle or friend of the family was driving me to the hospital. And I say, like, as we're getting there, he's like, okay, you okay? I'm like, am I okay? Like, I'm literally going to see my brother who's just died. Like, I'm never going to be okay.
Nah.
But I'm like, I'm okay. Like, because what was he going to do? You know? Yeah. And that's just that people get so uncomfortable. But you're right. It makes, whenever somebody will, like, say I meet somebody new and they ask me about my family, it's like, oh God, here we go.
Are you sitting comfortably? I tell you what you should do, just give them the book. Just have a copy of the books with you.
No, it's so true.
They'll be like, Marcy, why have you got a box of your books with you? Oh, I'm going to go meet some people. Oh, okay, that's fair enough.
It's so true.
Just give that
it's
to them.
It's so true.
Come back and speak to me in 2 days after you finish it. Then you can
if you still want to.
And then they'll walk up to you. Hi, Marcy, are you okay? Oh, for God's sake. How's things? Can I help?
Yeah,
no.
Exactly.
Jesus Christ.
I'm fine.
You're not learning anything from what I've just wrote down in this. 7 months of trauma I had to go through to write this book, and you'd tell me all this. Fuck you. But I do commend you for obviously writing this. I mean, I can imagine it helps a lot of people to resonate with obviously what you've been through, obviously the trauma you've been through and all the kind of more nasty stuff, you know. And have you had many, you mentioned before you've had people approach you as well to say that this can kind of, because when you resonate with someone who's been through the same, you start to get a bit more, you feel better about the whole situation. Mm-hmm. Because you feel as if when people are going through some harsh times in their life, even through anything or what's going on, to have that sort of like realization that you're not the only one must make a lot of things a bit easier to deal with. Have you had many people approach you discussing that with you?
100%. And it's like I said, there were so many different parts. So I had somebody say to me that she lost her brother around the same time. I think she was 18, but she said she'd never seen in print the way she was feeling. And so that was amazing. I had somebody else message me about a relationship with her father that she saw similarities with mine. And it just felt like a kind of a kinship. And then there are so many different things where, especially when it comes to the things that I felt shame around. And again, not everybody dealt with their traumas by being overly sexual or whatever the things that I did, but we have shame or guilt about different things. And I think, and that's the most isolating, because if it's an issue that you're struggling with, that's kind of out there, it's easier to connect because you don't feel shame talking about it. But when it's something you feel shame about, it's isolating because you feel you're the only one, and it makes you feel like a bad person. But then when you see somebody who says, no, I did that. And then they go, oh my God. Okay. So not only do you not feel alone, but then you realize, okay, no, I'm not a horrible person. Like this, people are actually react to things this way. Maybe you have to separate the person from the act, right? And it's like really good people can do bad things when they're in a bad place.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel I did some things that I regret. And that I'm not proud of. And I hated myself for it for a really long time. And I had to learn to forgive myself. And there are things I'll still never feel comfortable with. And I always say, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with not feeling comfortable about certain things or regretting certain things, but I don't beat myself up with those things anymore. I don't hate myself for that, because I understand what was going on at the time that made me do those things, and I'm kinder to myself. And I think when somebody else sees that, okay, so she did that, I did that, she's forgiven herself, and I like her, you know, she seems okay, then maybe I can forgive myself and I could be okay. And there's a lot of power in that. That's why I say all the time, look, we can share all the good stuff, and we need to share the good stuff, especially in these times.
Of course.
But I think when we share the dirty stuff, the shitty stuff, that the messy stuff, that's what really connects us. And I always say I relate better to people who've been through shit and had to pick themselves up a few times than someone who sailed through life. Not that it's bad, good for them, but there will be a bit of a distance, because I connect more with somebody who has fallen a bunch of times and had to kind of crawl their way back up. That's what connects us.
I mean, it probably resonates to one of my favorite quotes of all time, sort of thing. You know, if you let your own light shine, you unconsciously give permission for others to do the same. And it's very true, you know, even in all aspects, but obviously the book that you've written, that's you giving people the permission to say, I can do this, you can too. And it must be, it's uplifting for them. So it's not just it's so powerful writing down your story. And it could be so powerful to someone else or hundreds of people out there who read it. It's
pretty strange. And it seems so big. I think when you have it, so I tell people all the time, when they'll say, a lot of people say, oh, I thought about writing my book, write it. Even if no one reads it, even if it never gets published, write it, because when we keep it in here or in here, it seems so big and it seems so scary. But when you actually get it out on paper sometimes, then it seems a lot less powerful. Like you've taken the power away. And then when you speak it, which is the scariest thing, but when you speak it and you realize, oh my God, the world didn't end. And I just told everything and my world isn't ending and I'm okay. That power, that is the most liberating thing you will ever experience. It's the fear of my secrets coming out caused me way more damage than when I let my secrets out. Letting my secrets out was the amazing part of it.
Yeah.
It was the fear that was causing me damage, not the secrets. It was the fear around the secrets.
Sure. And getting it out there in the universe. And it's just like, it's there. So what? Come at me, bruv.
Exactly, though. But that's it. Because people are going to judge you anyway. They're going to judge you anyway. Even if you live a perfect life, somebody is going to judge you. Somebody is going to criticize. That's just, it's like you said earlier, right? It's 2021. Yeah. That's the world we live in. So if you're going to judge me, at least judge me on stuff that's judgeable. Like at least judge me because I'm being completely 100% authentic. Don't judge me on the person, on an image that I'm putting out because I think it's what you want to see and then you don't like it anyway. I never ever wake up in the morning and think, gee, what is some stranger on the internet going to think? Or anybody. I really don't make my decisions or live my life thinking, uh-oh, what's this person going to think? Or what are they going to think? That's just, especially when it's something like if you've seen my social media, I dance and I lip sync and I do silly things on social media. And my thing is this, look, if people judge me for that, if you weren't there for my tears, you know, I don't give a crap what you think about my joy.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like that's the thing.
It's like be like Eminem at the end of 8 Mile. That's what you say. Get it
that's
out
right,
there.
Exactly.
Show everyone your flaws, show everything what you're doing. You can't come at me because you can't.
That's right.
You've accepted it. And acceptance is a big, huge thing that a lot of people struggle with, is acceptance of everything. And they don't understand it. And they're just like, oh. But once you do have that acceptance sort of thing, that's when it's the whole world changes for yourself, I think. Your eyes, the blinkers come off. And as you see this whole world round about you because you've accepted what you've done in the past, you've accepted what's going on. Can't do nothing about it, so why worry about it now? Move on, enjoy it, and let people know that you're having a great time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Once you accept it, then you're not seeking other people's acceptance, because that's when it's dangerous. That's a tough way to live. Because like I said, you're not going to get everybody's acceptance because they have their own shit. I mean, that's the thing, right? They have their own stuff. And so we give other people so much power, which is just ridiculous. All we have, you know, all I have is me. Like as far as, like, I have to, it was my past, it's my present, it's my future, and I have to be comfortable with living it the way that feels right to me. That's it. As long as I'm not hurting anybody or intentionally hurting anybody, then that's the best I can do.
It's fine. Great, great message. I love it. My grandma's, you came out with some belters today, I tell you. I'm going to have to charge people to listen to this show, I tell you. I'm kidding. It's only free on Spotify. Go for it. But you've also, obviously, apart from the Good Stripper, which is available now, is it available now?
Yes.
Just double checking. It's available now, guys. You've also got, you also kind of dabbled in kind of was it the body? So was it? I'm just looking at it. Sorry, I'm looking at my notes now. The body image survival guide. Is that right?
Yeah. So I started teaching dance and fitness when I was 14. And it was always a big part of my life. And then later on, I mean, I battled an eating disorder. And when I got recovery from that, I really fell out of love with the fitness industry because it was all about, it was about aesthetics and not the mechanics of the body. It wasn't about health. It was about, it wasn't about being fit. It was about looking fit, even if it was killing you.
Yeah,
and I hated that.
It's horrible. The fitness industry, I can't stand it sometimes because of that same mentality. You think just because you look good, you know, with a guy's version of it, yeah, just do your chest, your arms, and your abs. That's it. The show muscles, they call them, don't they? But the rest of you's fucked. You know what I mean? You're gonna look like an idiot when you're 40.
No, I used to do, at the time I had little kids and I didn't like the message that they were getting at school. Their health, it was all about weight and it was just, it was causing so much damage. I mean, there are kids as young as 5 years old in eating disorder clinics. Five years old. There are so many people who are so worried about, you know, we hear about childhood obesity. There are, I can't remember what the percentage is now, but an insane amount of kids are way more at risk for developing eating disorders than they are type 2 diabetes. Like, it's just, that is the epidemic is body image and self-esteem issues. It's our obsession with being overweight. It's not being overweight. So I started speaking out about sort of telling my story with my eating disorder, and I was bodybuilding and doing all these crazy things, and I looked the part. I looked super muscular and thin, but I was very unhealthy. And I started speaking at schools. And one of the things I would do is when I would go into high schools, I had a thing, and the guys loved this because it was, I would show pictures of like 6 bodybuilders. And I would ask the kids what they think they have in common. And they'd say tanning, because they're all super dark, and, you know, muscles. And then I would explain that the things they had in common with A, they had all won major bodybuilding competitions. So there's Mr. Universe or, you know, Mr. World, whatever.
Yeah.
And they all died young from what it took to win those competitions.
Yeah.
So it was the whole, they won awards. They looked super fit, but between the drugs that they had to take, between the crazy dieting, the cutting, plus then the overeating, it was too much. And so I remember being at a high school and then being at a mall a few weeks later with one of my sons, and these teenage boys came over to me and they're like, you spoke at our school last week. And they're like, and now we can never look at a fitness map, like a muscle magazine again. I'm like, my job is done. But that's the thing. I just still have an issue with the fitness industry. And I was a personal trainer, and I did boot camp and I did personal training, and I was a fitness instructor, and left it because I felt that we were pushing the look good at all costs, shaming people, not realizing that, and it sounds so cliche, but fit bodies can really come in different shapes and sizes. I mean, any extreme in anything isn't healthy, but somebody who is what we would think is visually overweight, but who is active, is healthier than somebody who is thinner, but completely sedentary. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, I've been speaking out about this since 2007.
Wow. Like,
it's been it's still frustrating. It's still, I have more of an issue with the fitness industry than the beauty industry, because I think we know now Photoshop with the beauty industry. I think we understand that
filters,
when you're showing,
and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, but not even that. It's the thing about the beauty industry that's funny is you'll have a model, you know, promoting wrinkle cream, and it's like, yeah, you're 27. Like, come back to me when you're when you actually have a wrinkle. But we know that it's the fitness industry. And I'm affiliated with some. I'm very careful with the fitness magazines or things in the industry that I'm affiliated with.
Right.
Very careful. But my problem is that they make it a health thing. We'll very easily judge somebody because we think that they don't look fit. And we'll look at somebody who looks the part, not realizing what it took to look that way.
Yeah.
And it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous. And that will always make me super angry.
I mean, I've been there before, you know. It's back when I was younger, I was working away from home. If people don't know, I used to work in Afghanistan for like 2 years at some point. You couldn't do much apart from just go to the gym all the time. I had a gym there. It was one of those like kind of basic gyms with just weights and that's it. So it was there. And you do get into that sort of thing. You get a bit obsessed with it. I mean, I was there every day and I was looking up online what's the best exercises and, excuse me, and being addicted to men's health magazines and all that sort of stuff. And then I realized that these men's health magazines suck. I mean, they're rubbish. Oh, they're telling you, look at these guys, you can do this in 60 days. Just give me £200 a month and you can, no. And it wasn't until I'd actually did some proper research, you know, and I was listening to other people because there's so much conflicting information out there. No wonder people are confused on what to do. You know, you got one person saying, oh, intermittent fasting is really good for you. The next person going, oh, but intermittent fasting is really bad. You shouldn't do it. Or only do it if you're this. Or only, and you're just like, I just want to look good and feel good about myself. Why is it so hard?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? You have to say something different in order for people to buy what you're selling. You can't say, and that's the thing, you know, if intermittent fasting is the best one, well, then why is keto saying that it's the best one? Then why is paleo saying that it's the best one? And then why they can't all be the best one, right? And honestly, I just feel like people like to feel like they're doing something extreme. Like we do, because it feel then we feel like we're doing something. But when people say moderation and balance, it's like, oh, that sounds awful. Like, you know, but that's really your best weight. The problem is we're so screwed up with that. We think, especially I'm going to say with women, it's men too, but with women, there's, and again, it's a percentage of what we think we're, the way we see ourselves is heavier than we actually are. That's, it's like a scientific thing. And, and we think we're supposed to be lighter than we are. But oh, I think I just lost my train of thought. Hold on a second.
Yes. Hold on. I never, I've made her speechless now. My turn.
I never do that. but the best, here we go. The best, our best weight isn't a number. Like what we do is, the problem is we pick a number.
Yeah.
And then we think, okay, so I think I should be 10 pounds lighter. I think I should be 20 pounds lighter. And then we kill ourselves to try to get there. But that's, who made up that now? Who's saying that that's the number we're supposed to be? Instead, what we should do is do what makes us feel good. So being active, it feels good. You don't have to go to the gym every day, but doing something, find something you like to do. It feels good. Eating well, and by well, listen, I think that it includes everything. If you have to deprive yourself of things that you like constantly, that's not a way to live. So if you can live in a way that feels good and that you're happy, then your body will tell you where it needs to go. You know what I mean? Live right, and then you, because the weight that you're supposed to be might not be the weight that you're thinking.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is what we need to really get in the mindset of is exactly what you were saying sort of thing is do things you enjoy and the way you look and how your body looks is a secondary, not a primary. Because I think a lot of people say, I want, for our guys or maybe even girls, I want rock hard abs. I want a six pack sort of thing. You know, that shouldn't be a primary. It should be a secondary because you're doing something, say like rock climbing or playing football or doing whatever, sword fighting. I don't know. Whatever exactly. You do. And if that, the repercussions of doing all that fitness or going for a run or marathon running is you getting fit, lean, and having rock hard abs or big biceps or shoulders or a big badunkadunk, you know, all these women like to have nowadays, that should be a secondary, you know? I think that's what we really need to start to kind of get into our heads more instead of thinking that should be a primary aspect of us. Mm-hmm. And, don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon, Marcy, to be honest.
I don't know. I mean, the only thing that makes me, that's good is that even though it's the same messages, I'm seeing the same thing I'm fighting now in 2021 that I was fighting in 2007. The difference is back then there wasn't the social media where you have body positivity and you have the good stuff. At least now there are a lot of people speaking out about it. At least now there is the counter argument. So you're not just getting the negativity. So that's hopeful.
It's hopeful, but you also get the extremists who go one step further. So you get the toxic versions of each side as well, kicking off each other. And you're just like, oh my God.
Well, there's always going to be.
Makes it a bit more fun, though, doesn't it? Should say that.
No, it doesn't. Not for me.
Should say that, should I? Oh, cool. It's kicking off. Get your popcorn out. This guy, fitness trainer is kicking off about something. Hey, have a little bonder at this. But it's been a crazy time, especially on this sort of thing. I mean, it's, I just don't know. I mean, I've found a fit. I've done research myself. I found a couple of fitness guys that I do like. You know, I don't know if you know about Athlean X. The guy Jeff Cavalier, he's very good. He talks about the athletic side of it and does it properly. He's pretty decent, but you just have to do a little bit of research into him and don't look at these YouTube guys all the time. I think that's the problem. These youngsters look for the easy way out all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, guys, come on, do a bit of research. Doesn't take long. You've got everything on the palm of your hand. It's in your phone.
I know. But as soon as you see something that you like, you don't want to do any more research. Yeah, right? If they're seeing the image that they like, then I'm like, okay, that's good for me.
That's good for me. Exactly. So Matt's going to wrap up. We've been on here for near enough an hour now. So I think it's been absolutely amazing to talk to you. So where can people find you? Where can they see you? What can they do? Hey, where can they see you do you some crazy TikTok dances? People want to see that as well.
Do they though? Well, it's pretty easy to find. Everything's by my name. So it's just Marcy Warhaft. I'm sure you'll put it in your, you'll spell it out for them.
Of course.
So it's Marcy, and I'm on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. I mean, my website is, I'm building a new one for The Good Stripper. But now I have Fit Versus Fiction, which is for my body image stuff. But for my book, I will tell you that people can either get it on Amazon. Or if they want 20% off, they can go to my publisher's website, which is SutherlandHouseBooks.com. They just find my book and they hit the discount code, which is GOOD20, and they get 20% off. And it's, again, The Good Stripper, Soccer Mom's Memoir of Lies, Loss, and Lap Dances. But if anyone wants to get in touch with me, I'm pretty approachable. So just find me online, message me.
Fantastic. Obviously, guys, if you're listening, all this information will be in the description below. So have a look at it. Links, Instagrams, all that sort of good stuff will be on there. And Marcy, it has been an absolute pleasure. We should get you back on once you're an international bestseller and you're on your fifth book. Just remember.
You got it.
This pokey little podcast where you did originally. So I appreciate you taking time out. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Me too. Thank you.